Happy podcast day. Before we dive into the show, we wanted to chat about a brand and company that we absolutely love and think you will too. We've partnered with Needed for years now, and that's because they're one of those companies we genuinely love, trust, and actually use ourselves. When it comes to supplementation, they really set the standard. Needed supports women throughout the entire mother span, from preconception through perimenopause. One of our favorite supplements is their prenatal multi, which Lily and I both personally took during pregnancy. Here's what makes it different. 95% of women taking standard prenatals are still nutritionally depleted. So Needed formulated their prenatal with 22 nutrients at clinically meaningful levels in just 3 capsules a day. They also offer a powder form, which is lovely for those who are unable to swallow pills. It's designed to support you, whether you're dealing with first trimester nausea, postpartum recovery, or just the daily demands of a busy life. And now Megan, our founder, loves their peri multivitamin as she navigates her perimenopause era. If you're looking for third-party tested, practitioner-formulated supplements and nutrition that actually makes a difference, we can't recommend Needed enough. We are so honored to have a promo code for our amazing community so you can have radically better nutrition and save while doing it. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC, that's VBAC, at checkout to receive 20% off. Happy Wednesday, Women of Strength. I am your host, Paige, joined by my co-host, Lily. Hello, Lily. How are you?
I'm good. I'm buzzing. I'm so excited.
Oh my gosh, you guys. We have an incredible, special, don't want to miss episode for you today. We are talking to Dr. Cohen on the podcast today. And he's been somebody that we've wanted to have on for a long time. I didn't know about him when I was preparing for my maternal assisted cesarean, but he is the MAC pioneer. He's been doing them since 2017. Maternal assisted cesarean, MAC, is one where the mom helps pull the baby to her chest during the cesarean.
Yeah. And you'll hear us call it like a MAC. He says they call it a MOC in Holland. So not so hard on the A. But yeah, we just finished recording. So we're now coming back to tell you about it. And it truly like was just, I was crying for 90% of the episode. So, so good.
Yeah. Anyway, so I didn't know about him before, but I've since found his Instagram. And if you haven't, go head over to it. It's at KLDLOO on Instagram. And he has so much content. And he has so generously said that he will send us more pictures, articles, all the things. And specifically, he's put together with another photographer. Her name is Inga. And they've worked together to make what's called a macazine. So at www.macazine.online. It is a gorgeous, there's a Dutch and English version magazine of all the things to show your providers if you're wanting to present this option to them. So, oh my gosh, amazing. And with it being April, we really wanted to have him on this month specifically. And this is my first month, my first cesarean awareness month as a host, and Lily's as well. So we just really wanted to help all of our cesarean moms feel really seen. And we want you all to know that we are aware of you. And this episode today is for those of you who may never get the chance to have the vaginal delivery that you're hoping for, whether for personal reasons, medical reasons, whatever. We want you to know that we see you, and our CBAC moms, we love you. I am you. And better birth after cesarean is better options. It's better conversations. It's making every birth the best version of that birth that it can be.
Yeah. Oh, I'm crying again. Oh, I just... Women of Strength, we love you and we see you. And birth after cesarean deserves to be held with dignity. And I think that you'll see that in Dr. Cohen. And I told him that I just feel like even just hearing the way that he speaks about birth and about cesarean is so healing and so validating. And just the hope is to find a provider that speaks to you in the way that he does, regardless of if it's your VBAC provider or if it's your cesarean provider, whoever it may be. Our hope is for women to have access to providers that hold birth with such reverence, no matter what type of birth it is. So
that part right there. I was telling Lily after we chatted with him, I was just like, in a world and in Korea where it's a 70% C-section rate, where it just feels like we're moving backwards. He is a provider that I can now look to and know that he's moving forward. And sometimes we feel like there is no hope, but there is. And providers like him are the ones that are making the change. And just get ready.
Oh, it's going to be so good. So, Women of Strength, we'll be back with Dr. Cohen right after our intro. We'll see you there.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the Feedback Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
Welcome back. We are here with Dr. Cohen Duerloh for the purpose of my weak Dutch speaking abilities. He has said that we can call him Dr. Cohen or just Cohen for the purpose for this episode. He says his patients call him Cohen, which I love. I love that personal relationship you have. So we cannot wait. We have so many questions, so much to talk about. We're going to try to jam-pack it all into the space of one episode. But for now, we'll start with his bio, a little background, and then we'll just get into it. I'm so excited. Okay, Cohen is a Dutch obstetrician gynecologist specializing in perinatology and family-centered cesarean birth. Since 2017, he has performed more than 300 maternal assisted cesareans. You guys, I can't. Not I might get emotional.
With my team.
Okay, with your team. Can't wait to hear more about that. Developing one of the world's most experience-based approaches to this technique. He is the author of, okay, here we go, Door de Ogen van een Gynaecoloog, through the eyes of a gynecologist. I tried.
Very good.
And teaches widely on respectful trauma-informed birth care. Cohen focuses on creating transparency and calm so parents feel genuinely involved and supported in the whole process, especially in the operating room. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for the invitation.
He has been so gracious throughout this whole process, so enthusiastic and willing to hop on with us. Yeah. I want to ask and just start, tell us about your background. Who is Cohen and where are you from? How did you get into obstetrics?
I was born in The Hague, which is another big city in Holland. And I did my college degree in Leiden and also in Amsterdam. And I've worked in Rotterdam and in The Hague, but finally settled into Utrecht as an obstetrician. I'm married. I got two daughters, 18 and 20 years old, both home deliveries. So I'm really proud of my wife.
Wow, that's amazing.
That. And I'm also very enthusiastic about sports. I like to write. So, but most of all, I like to do my job. So, yeah, if you see me happy, I'm usually at the hospital.
I love it. Can you tell us a little bit about what the birth culture is like in the Netherlands in general?
Yeah, well, we have a little bit of a cultural difference from the rest of the world, that we consider pregnancy and birth not as diseases or illness, but just natural physiological processes. So that's how our care is organized. So in Holland, you don't start in the hospital. You're not usually monitored by the hospital, but by midwives. So highly educated professionals who do also a lot of home deliveries and sometimes deliveries in the hospital. And once there is a medical indication, they will refer you to me or my colleagues, and you stay with us until this medical condition, well, has gone away. We can kind of cure you, or you gave birth in the hospital. So we see that over 90% of all women start with their midwives, so start healthy, but almost 80% get sooner or later will give birth in the hospital. So there is a big transfer of women. But I think it's good. So you have both views on your pregnancy and also both views on your delivery.
Yeah, like giving women the opportunity to start with midwives from the get-go.
Yeah. And you have to consider Holland is like a really small country. So you're always close to a hospital. So some people say, oh, home delivery, not so safe. Well, it's home delivery within a 20-minute radius travel time of a hospital. So that makes it a bit safer than, well, I don't know, in Alaska or when you have to drive for hours.
Yeah. So much of our audience is not necessarily looking at a MAC. They're looking to VBAC. And I'm curious to know, when you all start care with someone and they're looking to VBAC in Holland, do they start off with midwives as well? Or do they automatically go to an OB because they're VBAC?
No. Most of the women start with midwives. So because everybody needs a midwife, but not everybody needs an obstetrician. So you like that?
I love that.
Quote, lots of quotes this
That's
episode.
That's so good.
Well, we do a lot of shared care, it's what it's called. So the routine checkups like 13-week scan, 20-week scan, NIPT testing, blood pressure measurements, all done by the midwife, preparation of birth, counseling. And some of the specific details concerning your birth, when it's a feedback, we usually offer women to give birth in the hospital. I'll do the counseling. So they come to the hospital, or in some cases, I really like that, I go to the practice of the midwives. So I'll be sitting next to them. So just the two of us talking to the parents about feedbacks or a planned C-section, of course.
That's amazing. So what is the overall C-section rate in the Netherlands?
Total, I think 20-25%. And in our hospital, it's about 10-15% planned, 10-15% unplanned, so maybe 50-50. Yeah. But we do have some requests from all over the country since we introduced the MAC.
Sure. I mean, I know that's such an interesting question to ask, because there's so much that goes into that number. So it's just, yeah. Okay. So I'd like to know more about your practice specifically. You did touch a little bit on how you interact with midwives and things like that. But can you talk a little bit more about your team and what that looks like?
Well, I work in the hospital, so we have this group of gynecologists. We're in a group of 10, and we work inside the hospital as a company. They kind of hire us to work in the hospital. And we have 4 obstetricians, and 6 of us are specialized in other gynecological fields, such as pelvic floor or fertility. So this is one team where we have all the disciplines covered. Utrecht is quite a big city, and Holland is a pretty crowded country. So we're close to other hospitals, and we kind of share the same population. And inside the city, there are multiple midwife practices who do a lot of care, and we work with them together. So yeah, it's too much. I'm not sure how it is in the US, but we have a big capacity problem in Holland due to lack of workers, lack of nurses. So we need to be creative. So it's good to work with midwives and share the burden of care.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, how did you first hear about the MAC? And what was your first one like? Let's jump into, yeah, just like how that all got started.
Well, the first time I actually heard was by a mother, Camilla, she was called. And she visited me in the hospital with her doula. And I know this doula also for quite some time. So it was kind of like a setup. And she had a traumatic birth. And she asked me, are you willing to do a mother-assisted C-section? And then I recalled I might heard about that years ago, maybe saw a clip or a photo. And the doula was smiling because she already knew that I was open for this suggestion. So I said, well, I'm going to try and see how this works. And then I went to my operating team, one of the pioneers in my team, the anesthesiologist and some of my operating, assistants. Is that the same word? Yeah. And they were really enthusiastic. So we said, well, we'll give it a try. And we went on an afternoon. We just claimed one of the operating rooms and got all these sterile sheets. And we made ourselves a baby. And one of us, well, one of the operating assistants need to lay on her back on the operating table with the baby on her belly. And we just tried and see, is it possible to prepare in such a way that she's able to guide her baby out? So we did that for the whole afternoon. We had a lot of fun. And then eventually we thought, yeah, this is possible. Let's do this. So, and Camilla was thrilled. And she came to the hospital that specific day. And during the C-section, we all covered her in sheets. And once she was there, ready to go, we were all smiling and very proud because we haven't even started. But this was like winning because we prepared her in the good way. And her doula was with her. And we just prepared C-section routinely. And then finally, almost when the head came out, I pushed the belly just a bit so the head comes out. And then we have this separation sheet in between. We removed it and I was guiding her hands towards her baby so she could carefully lift her baby out. And then the whole operating room was kind of felt quiet. I thought, wow, this is nice. And I also thought, whoa, this is really nice. And then she took her baby, she guided her baby all the way up to her chest and could immediately cuddle with her baby. And that was something she really missed the last time because, well, there were some severe complications. So we really missed that touch. So we were really happy and really enjoyed this moment. And she was very happy. And one of my best friends, he works for a local or a national television company. And I showed him my video and said, look what I did, because I was proud. He was like, really? But his colleagues were very, very, very enthusiastic. So it was on the news, on the 8 o'clock news. So that's the big news. So then we got a lot of attention and it kind of, yeah, rolled on from that point. So I started with just a few max a year. And then some other people picked it up and it was with some influencers and then it got all the way up to 50 a year. And then I wrote a book and then we got to 100 a year. So and now it's really peaking. So I have these great colleagues who are helping me out now because I wasn't able to perform all these MACs anymore. So they support me now. So I taught them how to do the MAC and well, they're very empathic doctors. So it wasn't really much to teach them. And they're now also performing MAC. So we're now with a three people team. So that's how it went.
Women of Strength, I'm crying. I just need you all to know. I'm just sitting here, uh-huh. Dr. Cohen, like, I wish that every single woman could have a provider that looks at birth with such reverence. Like, to hear you speak about how you're assisting these women and how proud you are, like, I am just touched, beyond touched. Like, how incredible.
Thank you. Well, this is the response I get also from my patients. So it's really fulfilling to develop this procedure. So I'm also very happy with Camilla. We still keep in touch. So she's sending me a picture of her daughter every year. She's now 9. She'll be 9 next year. So yeah, so that's very sweet. So I'm very...
9?
She's 9. My gosh. 2017 was my first.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So at that time, were the only one basically that you knew of who was doing that?
By then, yeah. I asked around and I did some research, just scientific research in the medical databases. There's nothing there.
Hmm.
And I reached out to my colleagues, but yeah, nobody heard about it. Nobody did that. So yeah, I was kind of on my own. But I had some very good team members. So the operating assistants were wonderful. They invented the operating gun, you know, the rope, but it's too big. It's still it reaches to your ankles, so it's too big. So we cut it in half, so you have a bare belly, like a crop top, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those inventions. That's what I was needing. So we had this great team, and this great idea was put in us by Camilla. And the funny thing is, over time, it keeps on getting better because when I explain to couples, this is the mark, this is how we're going to do it. Do you like it? Do you want me to change something? Is there something you see differently? And sometimes people say, yeah, I would like to have some music, or I'd like to have my husband or partner cut the cord. Well, those are the easy things. But some say, I'd like to have delayed clamping. So, of course. So we kind of included that, and I'd like to have skin-to-skin contact, so without the rope. So we had to think about that. So we cut the rope just a bit, and just before she puts her baby on her chest, there's somebody behind her who just tears open the rope just a bit, so she can put it skin-to-skin. So those are all little additions which, well make the mech every year a little more perfect. So
that's what I was going to ask next, is how has it changed? And okay, so Mac called Mock in Amsterdam, in Holland. Yeah. Yes, let's talk about just the procedure, the way you do it, mm-hmm. from start to finish. Because when I was preparing for mine, which was the first one in South Korea, my provider had never done it. We found one video that walked us through start to finish. And then even the way we did it was a little bit different. And then if I were to do it again, I would do it differently. And then watching your videos, I'm like, that is legit crowning.
No.
We leave time for that. So will you walk us through step by step what someone can expect if they were to come to you for a MAC?
Yeah. Of course. And so I have some really nice pictures, so I will be able to share them with you if you'd like some to add on to your podcast, but we'll talk about that later. So, well, the MAC is not only just a technique. Eh? So just guiding your baby out is nice, but it's usually a process of being guided by one gynecologist, a recognition of your trauma or your wishes to have a nice delivery, make a shared decision about how you want to give birth. So it's also the preparation on we call it polyclinic. So it's, I don't know, the appointments you have in the hospital, the outpatient care or something. Mm-hmm.
Like your prenatal care is what we would call it in the
course.
US.
Yeah. So prenatal care, we take a lot of time to prepare these women about the procedure, but also acknowledge their trauma and to see how we can make it a very nice experience for them. And then when the day is there, they come to the hospital very early. So we plan them early in the morning. And once there, we have this suite. So there are family-centered rooms. So you will be staying there with your husband and later with your baby. And you will be staying there throughout your whole admittance. And if you need a doctor will come to your suite and not you have to go somewhere else. So I like that. Then we take you to the operating complex and then we prepare you. So there are some different things when compared to a normal C-section, because you will be part of the surgery. So like I tell these women, you also need to prepare like I'm preparing. So wash your hands really good. So they all have to wash their hands before they get into the operating room. They are not allowed to wear any jewelry or rings or bracelets. So usually have these patient identification bracelets. We put them around the ankle because they will with the gloves. They are allowed to, with no hair masks or face masks. We don't need those in the operating room, so they're free.
I noticed that.
Yeah, that's nice, huh? None of our patients, actually.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah, it's better. And then the first part of preparation is kind of like the same as probably throughout the world. So we do a timeout. We'll check if it's the right patient and the right procedure. We also take the time. Are you okay? This is a nervous situation. Some people are a little bit worried. Some people are very, very traumatic experience in the operating. You really need to give them time to breathe and just talk them through every step of the procedure. And then finally, we'll put them in a sitting position. We'll get them the spinal anesthesia. And then we change a bit because your ECG monitoring, you have these little stickers. We'll put them on the back. So it's better for cuddling when they're on the back. So, and once the spinal anesthesia is in its place, they stretch their hands and their arms. And we're going to put alcohol in them so they can sterilize. And then they're not allowed to touch anything. That's a bit difficult for us caregivers. It's routine, but they get an itch or they, I don't know, touch something. So we're all
around. So they're laying
them.
Back at this.
No, you're
time.
Sitting.
They're
with
sitting
your hands
still.
Like this, yeah. Okay. And then we're going to help you lay down with your hands up.
Okay.
And then we put in a catheter to empty your bladder. So it's after the spinal, so they don't feel a lot. And then we're going to use iodine to clean their bellies, but all the way up here. So once they put their baby here and these sterile hands, yeah, we'll cuddle the baby. So I'm afraid if they get too close to the incision, they might get some of the bacteria here and down. So we need to sterilize this part. And then we'll put on sheets, just sterile sheets, and put on the rope, the crop top, and we'll get them gloves. So it's easier with pictures. So I make sure I give them to you. And then they put their hands on their chest like this, and then we put a separation sheet in between. So they're on their back with the separation sheet, but everything is inside the operating field except their head.
Okay, so that's different than what I had. Yeah. The sheet goes neck down and the hands are behind the sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can really connect with them. So you can grab their hand and touch them or squeeze them and say, how are you doing? Are you feeling okay? We're going to get started. Are you worried? Or I can touch them. And when I touch them, they know I'm going to talk to them. So they'll be very much part of it. And usually getting to the uterus will take 5, 10, 15 minutes. I do a lot of repeat cesareans because 50% of my patients has trauma, so they have previous deliveries. Most of them C-section. And once I open up the uterus and break the membranes, we'll wait a little for the amniotic fluid to come out. And then I'm going to put the baby from the outside in the right position, just behind the incision. And then I'm going to push on top of the uterus and just gently push the baby out. So you're not going to grab the baby out. So it's like a toothpaste. You push here and the toothpaste comes out there. It's like the same as push here. Now, well, you imagine what I'm saying. So, and once the baby is almost out, I leave it like this. So you see just this tiny bit of the head. And then we'll remove the sheet. And then I've instructed the husband or partner to lift her. So he's putting his hands behind her shoulders under the pillow and lifts her a bit. And her hands, I'm guiding them to the head of the baby and putting them on top of the head of the baby. So, and then we just take a little break of 5 seconds because women find it fantastic to feel the baby. So they're like, oh, this is my baby. So that's really nice. And once they're ready, their husband will lift them a bit. And due to the lifting, the baby will come out. So they actually do it a little bit together.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a nice thing we noticed when we did this a couple of dozens of times.
Yeah.
And then finally, the baby is born inside the hands of the mother. So she'll be the first one to touch her baby. And we'll just let the baby wake up so she can cuddle the baby and stroke him and just let him wake up and just blink at the light and start crying. So it's nice. And then I have to help them with the shoulders because you cannot lift your baby with the head first. So you need to wriggle them out a bit. So I'm just lifting two shoulders out so they can take the baby underneath the armpits and use their hands to support the head a little bit, and then slowly just get them out. And then we just go along. So some women have severe trauma, have lost the baby. They really want to cuddle really, really fast. So that's fine. So we'll just help them with that. And some just want to enjoy the view or want to look how pretty their baby is. So we can all take the, yeah, we sometimes call it the Lion King moment. Some women just take off their baby all the way up. So all fine. But eventually they want to cuddle. So, well, somebody is just waiting behind them just to tear open their ropes, just to put on skin to skin. And then we'll just wait. I'll send you pictures for that. So the whole team is just sitting there and watching them because, well, we need the cord to stop pulsating and there's nothing to do. So we'll just wait there. And that is, yeah, that's the nicest moment of the mother's sister, because the baby's doing fine. Baby's in the hands of the mother. The mother's doing fine. We'll just wait. Usually 3-4 minutes. Yeah.
What a beautiful way to enter the world. Like,
yeah,
oh my gosh.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so too. So, and then we'll just, sometimes we offer women to cut the cord themselves because they're sterile. So I get them a scissor and they, well, they take out their baby and they cut the cord themselves. So it's like really empowering for them. And sometimes they say, no, I'd like to give my partner now a chance to do something, because the last time he couldn't do anything because with cesareans is always the doctor who cut the cord. So usually one of them will cut the cord, and then we'll just put in a new separation sheet. I will change my gloves. I have 2 pair of gloves just to be safe, and then I'll start closing.
Okay, so then at this point the separation sheet goes below.
Sometimes there's a wish for lotus. Is lotus an English word? Where you keep the placenta.
Paige did that.
You did that.
I did. Yeah. I was going to ask you a little bit about that. So, how do you typically do the placenta delivery? Is that different than a routine cesarean, or different than other providers may do it, I guess?
Well, we offer a dose of oxytocin. So, and then the uterus will contract and the placenta will come out. And, well, I'm a strong believer of delayed clamping. So it's a gentle way and it's better for the baby. And there is some difference in opinion how long it should last. So is it 3 minutes or 5 or 10? And some parents like to have it an hour. Well, as long as everybody is okay, I don't mind. So some of my couples, they keep the placenta attached to the baby and we'll just get the placenta out, and then we'll just have to wait for the separation sheet and put it in a bowl, and the bowl we give to the partner.
I love that you do that.
Yeah.
My husband put it in a bag, and my husband was just like sitting there holding it, and
yeah,
it's like, maybe it doesn't make any difference evidence wise for the baby, but like after I was recovering and then I have this picture of my baby attached still, that picture is so healing for me because it feels so physiological in a space that is not, that can be the farthest thing from that. I just love it.
That's also about the muck. It's the same. It's, I don't have less blood loss. I don't have brighter babies or healthier babies or better moms. I just have nicer experience, and I think it works throughout their lives. So the start of the family is nice, and I think happy moms are better moms, but there's no hard scientific evidence. So that's something which makes it sometimes difficult to implement in other hospitals. But I would say, what's wrong with being nice to our mothers? So that's just it. You're just giving them a nice experience. So, and it doesn't cost you anything. Just, I calculated, it's 4 minutes of extra operating time. So it's nothing. So, and one rope and 2 pair of gloves. That's it.
Paige here. Lily and I just want to take a moment to share how much we truly appreciate Needed. They're a company we've partnered with for years, and it's because they consistently show up with supplements that actually support real life and real bodies. From their prenatal multi, omega-3, and iron, to supplements that support you during your conception journey and beyond, Needed really has something for women at every stage of life. And we also love that they don't stop there. They even support men with products like Sperm Support Plus and more. They've been so generous to our beautiful community, offering 20% off your first order with code VBAC, VBAC at checkout. Visit thisisneeded.com to get started. But I tell you, it does make a difference. And I hope someday there will be research that does reflect that. And that was actually one of our questions from a listener is, do you see any medical or physical benefits outside of just patient satisfaction?
I did some research of 200 max, but it's now under revision. So it's not accepted yet in the medical journal, but it would make my life a lot easier because I can always refer to this data. Yeah. I don't see differences in complication rate, neonatal start, Apgar scores, blood loss, infection rate, also not for the mother. Just slightly longer operating time, 4 to 6 minutes in a team with experience. So it might take a little longer at the beginning, but you will get there. And just a bit more of material, so gloves and rope. And there are some signs that breastfeeding goes better, especially when it comes to experiences. Women are more confident after this, have more trust in themselves, describe better bonding. And 100% still would recommend this to other women. So that's pretty high for a medical
100%?
Procedure. 100%. 100%. Wow. Still 100%. Yeah. So, and if you compare a gentle C-section, I also rated them. So I also do gentle C-section. Not everybody wants a mother-assisted C-section. So, and that's an average rating of about an 8 on a scale from 1 to 10, an 8. So, and the MUC is about a 9. So it's better, but it's not a big difference. But when you are a 1, when you come from a 1 or a 2, you go to a 9, that's a huge difference.
Huge.
So there's your gain, I think. So,
any research that has explored like rates of postpartum depression or anxiety in comparison to like a traditional C-section versus a MAC?
No. It's difficult also to score those, and it takes a long time, and I still got a job, so I don't have the time to collect all the data. So I have these really nice students, some of them medical students who will help me. A couple of them really helped me out. But I do see when I ask women to describe their experience, the word healing is often mentioned. So it was a healing experience. So I think we're on the right way. So I think it will lower depression rates, especially in women with trauma who are already vulnerable. Yeah.
I agree. I agree with all of that. Have you ever done a paternal assist where the dad helps?
No, okay. This is a question I get quite often. So usually when some of my colleagues try to make fun of it, you're not doing a mother. When is the father going to assist? Or when is nobody going to assist? So kind of making fun of this muck. So, well, I haven't had everything is possible. But there are some difficulties when you allow a partner to go inside the operating room, inside the sterile field. So there are a lot of... They're usually not authorized. They don't have the right education. So they're maybe a lot of emotionally involved. So yes, I think it could be possible, but you take quite some risks. So there should be a lot to gain if you do something like that. And I haven't met a partner yet who I thought this is the right balance. So too many risks.
Case by case, sure. No, case absolutely. By case.
Yeah, it's sure. Just, tailored.
Do you mind if we get into some unique circumstances?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so just kind of what about breach?
Yeah,
possible?
Yeah, okay. Definitely. But breech deliveries are a bit difficult. You need to practice them. You need to learn your techniques, especially when the baby doesn't come out as smoothly as you'd like or get stuck along the way. So it's difficult to teach women how to perform a breech delivery on their own. So that's kind of hard. So they usually guide me. So I will just... And when it's a full breech, it's feet first. So they just feel the feet and they just... And I kind of help them take the bottom of the baby and they just hold the bottom and they just slowly take the baby out. And I'm just helping getting the arms and the head. And then finally got their baby upside down. So I need to help them flip the baby. Yeah, so it's nice. But I tell them then it's more of, co and a mother assisted C-section than a whole mother assisted. And we need to do it together more. Yeah.
I love that. Have you ever had twins? How does that work?
The same. Most of it we did one, I think, a year ago, the first one in the Netherlands. And then a week later, another. And those are still my only two.
That's how
because
it goes,
because they deliver prematurely. So I had some couples who really liked it, but you have to be uncomplicated, low-risk birth, low-risk women. A lot of them deliver prematurely or get preeclampsia or IGR or something. So there's not a lot of options. And they take out the first baby and then they just cuddle and then we'll wait and we'll kind of check if the second baby's in the right position. And once she's ready, we usually take 3 minutes or so when everything is good, so not a lot of blood loss. We try to do getting out the baby while the other one's still there, but it was too difficult. So we take the baby to her husband and then I help her with the second one, who was in breech, by the way. And then eventually we put them both back skin to skin. Yeah, that's nice.
It's nice.
So what if there is a mom that is laboring? So I know we have a physician here in Colorado who will do a MAC. And he did, the first one was, as far as I understand it, at least, that she was laboring. And then they had to go to the operating room. And it was kind of a spur of the moment. Like, would you be up for this? And he was up for it. What does that look like if a mom were to be in labor and then have to pivot to a cesarean? Is a MAC an option for her?
It's more difficult. There are several difficulties. In our hospital, there are just two obstetricians who perform these MAC now since a year. So they might not be on call. Mm-hmm. So my colleagues, they don't do that. They can't do it. We also need some specifics on the team and anesthesiologist. So we need to have the right team. Sometimes the mothers are in pain. So it's difficult. Once in a while, it works out. It happens to me, I think, twice or three times or so. We call it a SMAC. It's a spoedmak, so emergency MAC. Mine is really funny.
The smack.
Yeah. A spoedmak.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so
but
good.
It's rarely. So I have to be honest with the patients in the prenatal care. I tell them, if you get into labor before your planned C-section, it's unlikely that we can perform a MAC. We'll try, but usually we can't make it happen anymore.
I see. So when do you typically schedule them or advise them to schedule?
It's 39 weeks on average. Yeah, sometimes you do it a little earlier with placenta previa, for instance, or sometimes a little later with women who are first timers, so they tend to be a little later with delivery, but never the due date or later, so always 39-40 weeks.
Okay, so with placenta previa and what about accreta? Are there, what would risk someone out complication wise?
Well, if mom is really sick, so you should be able to feel well, to enjoy the moment. So if you really sit preeclampsia, so I don't think you want to. I never had the question. If your baby is really sick, so he needs to, somebody has to take care of him real soon after birth, with severe IGR or congenital abnormalities. Sometimes during surgery, when we have a severe bleeding, sometimes we need to, stop the MAC and say, or when the baby comes out and he's not bleeding. So it didn't happen because I do low risk, but if that, we need to cut the cord and do something, of course. And if the placenta is too close to the incision, so placenta previa is possible, but then the placenta should not be on the front. So if it's from the back previa, it's okay, but if it's from the front, you need to cut through the placenta. So I use ultrasound to kind of make a window where I can make my incision, also with low laying placentas, but sometimes it's impossible not to damage the placenta, and sometimes it's a little bit difficult. So I tell parents, I might cut the placenta a bit so that starts bleeding, then we need to speed up the MAC. They understand, because when the placenta's bleeding, the baby's bleeding, so we usually have to clamp the cord a bit sooner, but we can still manage to give them the skin to skin. So there are not a lot of, there are some contraindications, but especially placenta on the front or very sick babies or very sick mamas.
Okay. What would you say to the provider who has a patient come to them? They say, I heard of this thing. I listened to the VBAC link and I heard this guy in the Netherlands and he said that he does these, and then the provider feels really hesitant about like crossing a sterile field. And how does this process look? What would your advice be, provider to provider?
Well, call me. That's okay. I got protocols, I got data, I got pictures. So I have helped a lot of colleagues throughout the world. So, and usually they just need to see the pictures. So when I tell them about the MAC, people are like, what? You're really going inside your belly, getting your baby out and with all the organs and the blood. But when you show them the pictures or the clips, they say, ah, but this is nice. This is something different. That's why I work so with birth photographers, because they really catch the feeling of the MAC. So I would say that to them, yeah, just send me a DM. So, and I'll answer you and I will help you with the protocol. I got a lot of DMs, so I helped a lot of people. So it's nice to do, to spread out this MAC.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into some, that was kind of the $1 million ticket question from our listeners, is how can I bring this up? So
I had some women from the US reach out to me. So, and I said, yeah, just give them my email or my Insta and I will be happy to help them. But yeah, well, you have to have a caregiver who really wants to. So I also hear a lot of problems. So the caregivers say it's not sterile or it's dangerous. Well, you're not thinking in solutions. You're thinking in problems now. So if you think it's not sterile, come with a solution how to make it sterile instead of stop thinking. And so I also encourage women to find a provider who will start thinking. So when they say, oh, MAC, I don't like it and it's stupid, and now pick somebody else. So pick someone who's really interested. Oh, I'd like it, but I'm worried about sterility. And that's okay. I'm worried about the temperature of the baby or the costs or the operating time. And then you can discuss the options, and then you can send them to me, and then I have something who I just need to help, who is willing to learn.
So in that vein, what would you say to like the next generation of OBGYNs that is upcoming? How do they prevent themselves from getting into a place where they're so stuck in a box? How do you have an innovative career? What would you say?
That's a difficult question. I don't know. You have to be a bit of luck. So I'm surrounded by an innovative, friendly hospital. So, and also very open colleagues who sometimes roll their eyes a bit when I think of something, but they always allow me to try something. I think one, find yourself a team who is willing to think of solutions, only in solutions. No problem, just solutions. Try it a couple of times. Don't stop once. Just say, okay, we're going to do this 10 times whenever you go to hospital. When you want to introduce a MAC, we're going to do this 10 times. Whatever happens, we're going to do it 10 times. Wow. I don't believe there are any people who after 10 MAC still think this is just nonsense. So I think everybody is, what I see in my hospital, we also had these hesitant people who thought, well, they called it the Disney experience. So is this really necessary? But over time, I think there's still a small group. Of course, you can't win them all. But yeah, the majority of my hospital really likes it, enjoys it.
Okay, I have a best friend who is, she's in her OB residency. So I'm going to send her this episode. So Madison, when you're listening to this later, I love you and you should listen to Dr. Cohen because he's amazing. Yeah. And well, this is such great.
You should text me or send me an email and then I'll get her the protocols. That can
help. Ooh, cool.
There we go. Yeah. Okay, one of our listener questions was if they can't find a provider anywhere near them or if they want to come have a MAC with you, do you accommodate families from other countries?
Yes, we do. So I don't have a lot of families. There's some people from other countries looking into that because insurance works different in different countries and travel. And you should come, you're not allowed to travel from, I don't know, 37 weeks. So that's, you have to stay quite some time in Holland. Sometimes when complications are there, so you need to stay longer and there's no family. So that's some of the things we noticed. Also with nationality, how is your baby Dutch if he's born in? So will he be a US citizen? So those are questions we are now just trying to answer. So, but I get so many requests now from other countries, so we're looking into that. But in Holland, it is possible for everybody to come to a hospital and just pay the fee and get a cesarean. Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that's amazing. But,
yeah, it's more easy if I come to that other country, I think.
There you go.
Yeah, just teach the other doctors. So.
All right, Lily, do you want to ask another one?
Gosh, I'm trying to like speed read through these questions.
Okay.
I guess, so talking about the sterile field, you talked about like putting iodine all the way up to like higher up and things like that. How do you continue to protect the sterile field with a MAC? What does that intentionality look like?
Explain to the mother what a sterile field is in the preparation in the prenatal care appointments. So I have these very long photo series to talk them through the MAC. So from start in our hospital till they go home, I got pictures of everything. And I tell them, this is important, this is important. But don't be upset because I'll be next to you. So I'll be talking you through. So I will remind you every time, this is what we talked about. So this is the moment you cannot touch anything. So they just smile. And especially when the husband needs to lift the system, I tell them, I'm going to say that to you. You're going to say, oh yeah, I forgot. That's what you always say. Yes. So yeah. Once you need to lift her. Oh, yeah.
The adrenaline, brain fog.
Yeah. So they're looking at their baby going, they were, they're also traumatized sometimes. So we need to take some time there.
Or in some cases, the dads miss the birth completely if it's a stat or general anesthesia. So sometimes they weren't even able to be there.
Yeah, in Holland, when there is general anesthesia, we still offer the partners to be there.
Wow.
So there will be skin to skin with the baby needs skin to skin with the parents. So. No, he will in the hospital. Yeah, but tell him, your wife is asleep. She's intubated, so it's not a pretty sight. We kind of covered just a bit on the side, and he'll be sitting there. Yeah, he's just sitting there alone, so we try to talk to him a bit. And then, but after 10 minutes, he will get his baby on his chest, so he's happy. And then we'll take him to the, That's right.
So, I'm curious, in general, you've spoken to so many ways that Holland does obstetrics differently than most of the world, especially comparing to the US. What are your like maternal and fetal outcomes because of the way that you all practice medicine sort of generally? Do you see better fetal and maternal outcomes because of things like starting off with midwifery care and having dads in the OR when their wife is under general anesthesia? Like, what does that look like as far as outcomes go?
I think we're on average in Europe. So I have to be honest, about 15 years ago, there was this big European report and we were in the last place or so considering neonatal morbidity and mortality. So we're really shocked because we thought we did a great job with our midwives. So we changed a lot of things. So we work closer with our midwives and we increase prenatal care, focus on growth restriction. So and now we're just in between, just below the Scandinavian countries who are always our idols. They have really good care. So no, yeah, I think, yeah, we're on average. So we're not accelerating, but yeah, average.
So one of the worries from a listener was, she said, my arms were like noodles. How in the world can people do this? So speaking to anesthesia, do you do anything different? I know sometimes in my past cesareans, I have felt so out of it, just pumped with all of the anesthesia and you're groggy, you're not with it. I mean, that's after having labored typically. More often, I think that happens. But when women get nauseous or do you do anything different? Anesthesia wise?
No, I don't think so. No, we usually we put the spinal in the same place as I've read throughout the literature in other countries, also with the same kind of doses. So, and sometimes the block ends up higher than you were aiming for, and then you can lose a little bit of strength, but it hasn't happened to me a lot. Sometimes we do notice that pain relief is not sufficient And that's the advantage of the mock. We'll just wait. We'll say, okay, we'll wait. And then we'll wait 10 minutes. And if it's still not good, okay, we get another spine or some undress. Okay, then your operating time will get a lot longer. But it's all planned C-section in low-risk women, so you can wait a little longer.
Mm.
So it's in my hospital, it rarely happens that women need to be intubated or needs to be on the full anesthetic.
So if a woman starts
in the emergencies,
then they speak up and tell you their feeling, and then you just stop what you're doing?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, wow.
No, it's really hard to continue. You kind of surprise yourself, and not in a pleasant way. If you touch somebody and you say, ouch, or I feel pain, you stop. It's not nice to hurt people, so you just stop. So everybody stops. So, and sometimes it's just the worry or the anxiety, especially in emergency. So you have to talk to them and touch them again and see, is this anxiety or is this really pain? But you don't continue. No, not at all.
And then sometimes they just ask for an extra dose of
the medication. You can give an extra dose. Okay. Or you can also explain to them that some people think they don't feel anything during cesarean, but you do feel something. You feel the pressure. You feel your body moving a bit. And if you think you're not going to feel anything, but you do feel something, sometimes it appears as pain. So you need to tell them, this is not pain. Hey, you're worried. Huh? You have to tell them also in the prenatal care. And we have different. Yeah, we can give them anesthetic also in the low dose, or remifentanil. It's kind of like an opiate. But you want them to be present at the birth. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of hesitant. So you have to make a balance between not too much pain relief or full anesthetic and the pain. But continuing without addressing the pain, no. Never.
Thank you for addressing that. Oh, that's huge. I know a lot of women have a lot of trauma from cesareans with that specifically.
Yeah, it was all over the news here in Holland too last week.
Mm.
Yeah, those were heartbreaking stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, to kind of gear towards wrapping up, let's shift to some advocacy work. You said that you've helped other providers and countries have the MAC. Yeah. What are some of those success stories that you've seen?
Argentina. I can give you her Insta. She just did her second one. She texted me, I did a second one.
Aww. Yeah,
she's amazing. And she did it so sweet. So I'll send you the link. So it's, you could use her. She did, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4, but she really got the vibe. She really knows how to do that. So that was nice. Belgium. So countries close. In the US, there are people who ask me about it. And a lot of hospitals in Holland who are, there's a lot of demand here. Not all the hospitals like it to send all the women to Utrecht or where I work. So they're trying to set up their own MAC system. So I'm happy to help them with that.
So cool.
Yeah, it's nice, huh?
Yes. That's amazing.
Oh, in Norway, by the way.
Okay.
So
they're
getting there.
Love it. So what else do you have going on in the future? You have your book and anything else you want our community to know?
I think we should focus on what a lot of medical caregivers tend to focus on risk and benefits and advantages and things you can measure and hard data. But you can also look at experience, ask women what they like to make it pleasant for them. There's no need. You can be nice to people. If it's safe, you can try to do nice to them. So that's why, for instance, we allow now birth photographers in our operating rooms. Especially, it's not always possible in emergency. Because when everything goes in a blur, then you got the pictures. So that needs a lot of convincing. That's why I also work with doulas to see, can we get doulas, can we train them in a way that they can understand the hospital system a little bit better, so they can really help the parents. So they tend to give one-on-one care. This is something we can do, and they are happy to do so. So we're kind of exploring that in our hospital. So those are my major topics for next year.
It's great work. I love it.
But it only works in an environment where people allow you to do this. So
yeah,
I'm happy. So, surrounded by those people.
Well, like I said earlier, I just truly, I wish that every single woman had a provider that could be nice to them. Like, what a simple concept. But I think that especially women who've been at the other side of obstetric violence, like, that is such a healing thing to hear from an OB. So just thank you for speaking to the women who strengthen our community, because I'm sure that those are words that will linger for a long time.
Thank you. Well, thanks for inviting me and talk about this. I really love talking about this.
And personally, here it comes. As somebody who did not get to hold my babies 3 times over. I did not get the golden hour. And then in my MAC, I did. And it was just this, I was the one who was like, I need my baby now.
Yeah.
And I sobbed and I wailed, and it was so primal. Because that's how birth should be. Babies should be with their moms. And yeah. I personally want to thank you for the work you're doing.
All right. Thank
and
you.
For joining us. It's so important, and it matters, and it makes a difference. And it changed the trajectory of my life, of my postpartum. It's so much more than just those extra 4 minutes that it
yes,
takes
that's
in
right.
the OR.
Yeah.
The effects
yeah, I agree.
Are lasting for lifetime. So
yeah.
Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
This episode featured ads for Needed. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.